The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
This is the Poker Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris Tessero. And Chris, happy anniversary. Black Friday.
God, yeah.
A year ago, April 15th.
It's
hard to believe.
Yeah, you know, usually you should have candles and a party, but it's a tough one, boy. It was one of those things that when it came down, I mean, people in the poker world can tell you where they were, what they were doing when they first heard about it. And nobody quite understood the scope of it. And for me, it was the moment was opening up a online poker website and seeing the Department of Justice logo in place of the poker site.
Yeah.
And going, oh my goodness.
Well, I guess you could celebrate by like sitting in a room with the lights off or trying to log into a website that has been taken over by the DOJ. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, you could. But you know what? It's one of those things that... It's you can look at it in a whole bunch of different ways. It was something that was probably coming in the United States. You knew that there had to be some legislation, but I think everybody was always expecting something to happen, but I don't think anybody was expecting the hammer to drop the way that it did, as swiftly as it did, and as completely and effectively as it did. That was the part that just amazed me about Black Friday. Was the fact that the U.S. government actually could shut down everybody. And they did. And it was astounding to see that, because you don't realize the power, you know, because you think about that. I mean, how does the government, if the website servers are a million miles away, how does the government shut them down? Well, they did.
They did, yeah. To reflect on the one-year anniversary of Black Friday, we'll be joined by poker players Phil Hellmuth and Dennis Phillips. They will join us later in the show. Are you surprised at how slow the progress has gone as far as, you know, getting legislation done in the U.S. federally? And right now, obviously, they're trying to do things statewide as well, but obviously, federally is the big goal. That's the big dream.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm surprised it's been as quick as it has.
Really?
I mean, truthfully, I didn't know where it was going to be. That was one of the things that was really scary about, you know, that week, 10 days, 2 week period right after April 15th, was that nobody knew what the fallout was going to be. Nobody knew where things were going to go. Nobody knew if they're getting their money back from any online sites. The answer was maybe yes, maybe no. You know, and that turned out to be what the answer was.
Yeah.
Depending on which site you had your money on,
yeah.
You either got it back or you didn't. You know, Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker and Full Tilt Poker, if you had money on those sites, kiss it goodbye. It was gone. So that was the other part of it, was you had this sudden, swift change in the poker economy where guys who had huge bankrolls online all of a sudden not only didn't have any money left, but they were also unemployed. Their revenue stream was gone. So if you think of yourself as a high-stakes poker player... you know, and you had a couple hundred thousand dollars or $50,000 or $30,000 or $10,000 online, and that's what would your bankroll to generate your income with, you know, it's not like they stopped it and, well, you're going to take your $10,000 and now you're going to go play live in casinos and try and grind it out. You had nothing. Your money was gone, locked up, or disappeared, depending on where it was. And then you had no job, because if you don't have any money at all, it's very difficult to play poker for money.
Yeah, and obviously that's the worst part, because you don't have access to it. That's your source of income, and the fact that you can't even touch it. That's the craziest part.
Right. I mean, in some cases, it was completely gone.
Yeah.
So not only did it affect everybody, you know, immediately, but it had an effect on the poker economy. You know, things changed drastically. Games changed, and nobody knew where it was going to go. People thought there was going to be a rush on the live play in casinos, and that was going to take off, and that people would all of a sudden just show up and start playing live. But they didn't have a lot of people didn't have the bankrolls to do that, because their money was gone or tied up. So you know, it didn't quite work out that way. The really interesting part to me was the World Series of Poker last year. Nobody knew what was going to happen, and I'll tell you. all of us in the poker media, all of us supposed experts on it, and I did the air quotes thing there, we all thought that there wasn't a chance that there would be 5,000 players in the main event, that that with everybody's money gone and locked up, that there was no chance that there would be 5,000 players. And we were completely wrong. Everybody except for Seth Polansky, the PR director for Harrah's, nobody believed that there would be more than 5,000 players. And yet, boom, they had this huge year where people came out of the woodwork to play live because that was all they could do. So there was the shifts in the way that things went, the flow of it was so strange and so bizarre because you'd think one thing was going to happen and then something else would happen. You'd think people would run to the casinos and start playing live, and they didn't. You'd think that the tournaments would drop off because people wouldn't have the bankrolls, but they exploded in size everywhere. World Poker Tour events were massive. World Series of Poker was massive. It was, nobody could really predict accurately what was going to happen. It was such as, and it still is. I mean, let's face it, it's still a very strange time, but it's changing quickly in the United States, and I don't think anyone hoped or thought that it would change as fast it has as it has. And I think we're probably looking realistically, and we've talked about it before on the show, at an opening up of poker in the United States maybe within a year now, maybe within a calendar year of where we are.
Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of people are hoping for that. And who knows if this is just coincidental, but of course, four poker players have filed a class action lawsuit, Chris, against Full Tilt Poker executives Howard Letter and Chris Ferguson, of course, alleging that the two men exercised unlawful dominion and control over players' funds that threw them into Full Tilt Poker before Black Friday. The defendants are looking to refund player funds and pay punitive damages upward of $150 million. I mean, this isn't really surprising that people are, you know, trying to get something going against these guys. Do you think they have a shot?
I don't know. I really don't know. You know, first of all, I'm not any kind of a legal expert.
We should get Stu Hoegner back on.
We should get Stu Hoegner back. He would probably be able to tell us if they had a case or not. But, you know, at the end of the day, something has to be done. And, you know, if those guys don't end up in jail, then let's hope that they end up in civil court and, you know, someone can at least extract as much as possible from them, because you know what they did, if it was with full knowledge, and there seems to be some reason to believe that with at least a couple of them, with Bitar and with Letter and Ferguson, that they did know what was going on, and you know they did knowingly pay out money that they should have kept for their players. So I hope someone in some way extracts some justice, because you know it's I don't know if it's going to make anybody feel better, but at least it'll be some closure. And that's one of the things that's strange, the dynamics that's strange about this whole Black Friday thing, is that we really still haven't seen any real closure. Some of the payment processors have had their day in court, and you know there's been some plea bargains and things like that, but we still haven't really felt any sense of closure as to what happened. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
A topic that we have touched on previously on this show, of course, coming up at the World Series of Poker, it will be the big one for one drop, the $1 million buy-in tournament, and it looks like they have 30 players that have agreed to take part so far, including Daniel Negreanu, Gus Hansen, just to name a few. And of course, this is going to be the biggest prize pool in the history of poker. $12 million for the first place prize is what they're expecting. This will go from July 1st through the 3rd, coming up at the World Series of Poker. Like I said, you still interested, Chris, trying to get in through that satellite?
I've been raising funds through this. I so far have $113 towards the buy-in. So, you know, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Listen, I think this is going to be interesting. And I think what happened, Harrah's sent out that press release that they're saying they were up to 30 players. I spoke to the people from One Drop, and hopefully we're going to be able to get Guy Laliberté, the founder of Cirque du Soleil and the driving force behind the One Drop Foundation, get him on at some point to talk about this. But I thought the thing that was really interesting about that release was that if you're a poker player and you looked at that list of names, what you saw should be dollar signs.
Yeah.
Because there were very few, there was a handful, 8, maybe 10 big name pros on that list, and a lot of very wealthy businessmen.
Yes.
So if you're a poker player and you have the wherewithal to either round up, get backers, or come up with $1 million to play, you should be playing in this tournament, because this looks like easy money. And that's a crazy thing to say for $1 million buy-in tournament. But it does. I looked at that list of all these businessmen, and I thought to myself, That's gravy money right
yeah.
there.
Well, I'll take a line from Major League. I never heard of half of these guys. So that's,
yeah, well, you know, there was a listing that came out. Harris sent out a listing of what many of them did for a living. And they're all CEOs of this and that and the other thing, you know, for the most part. The vast majority of the players in this. And, you know, it's hard to think of a guy who runs a multi-million dollar or a billion dollar company as dead money. But I mean, they could very well be in this tournament, be dead money. So it'll be interesting to see if this list being published causes more players to all of a sudden go, maybe I do want to play in this. And, you know, maybe guys will pool their money, get some backing and whatnot. I think that if you have the wherewithal to play in this, that you've got to look at that listed in the names and think it's pretty juicy.
Who knows? Maybe it's like Casino Royale and you have guys like LeChiffre.
Yes.
Some guys you've never heard of that just yes. play underground and have these amazing talents.
Yeah.
And cry blood.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm hoping that there's going to be... I want to see some guy there, because this would be the interesting thing about this one-drop tournament, is $1 million buy-in is out of the comfort zone of even the biggest poker pros. That is not in their... They're not comfortable losing that amount of money. Nobody in the poker industry is comfortable losing that amount of money, aside from maybe Andy Beal, who's playing in this, by the way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's got the money and the poker, so... If you were a betting man, he might be the guy to bet on, because he might not care. But if you get a guy who can make this $1 million not matter to him and be super aggressive and, you know, just willing to fire it all in every possible spot and every opportunity, you can have some fireworks, because you're going to have guys who will know, have a pretty good idea that they might have the best hand at certain times, that'll be laying it down because the $1 million means something to them.
Well, definitely. Hopefully they televise this, tape it or something, so at least everybody can see
if
it.
Let me ask you this question. This is the old World Series of Poker main event question. You know, people always ask this. It's the hypothetical question of all hypothetical questions. You're sitting down at your table, and it's the first hand of the main event of the World Series of Poker, but in this case, it's the first hand of the $1 million buy-in tournament, and a guy shoves in front of you. And you look down, and a guy calls him, and you look down at pocket aces. What do you do? So there's two players all in front of you, and you've got pocket aces, and you just bought in for $1 million, and it's the first hand. What do you do?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
I wonder, wow, this is the greatest thing that could have happened on the first hand.
You think so? So if you're playing...
That's what I'd think.
If you're if I got you into the main event of the World Series of Poker, $10,000 buy-in, main event of the World Series of Poker, and on the very first hand... All this excitement builds up for all this time. You sit down. You know that you're playing with $10,000 buy-in.
Yeah.
And the first hand, there's a shove and a call, and you're looking down at aces. And you're like, this is the greatest thing that could ever happen? So you just snap call with your aces?
I would. If I had jacks, I'd be a lot more worried. Or queens.
Well, we're talking about having the best hand pre-flop. You snap call with aces.
I do it.
$10,000.
I do it.
I don't know, Rob.
Really?
I don't know. I don't know that you would. I think it's easy for you to say in a hypothetical situation, but if you had 10 grand, if you walked up to that cage, and I've done it at the Rio, and handed them $10,000 in $100 bills to go play in the main event of the World Series of Poker, I don't think you could make that call as easy.
Maybe not. But knowing that that's the best hand that you could have pre-flop, and knowing that, you know, you don't know if you're going to get a better hand later.
But you're going to lose 40% of the time against two other people.
True. I still do it.
That's the right answer.
I still do it.
That's absolutely the right answer.
I still do it.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe but what one do you do day. If you're in the $1 million tournament?
That's a little bit tougher, I think. But no, I probably still do it either way.
See, I think you would see some big pros lay down huge hands there, because they would figure that they're better than most of the players in the field, and they can grind it out over time. They don't need to flip for the money. They can win over the longer period of time. So I think you might see, if that situation happened with, you know, say Daniel, we'll ask him, Daniel Negreanu, shove, call, and he looks down at aces. What does he do?
Yeah. No, it's a valid question. It's tough if you're sitting there. No, yeah. For sure. So, but the thing I would say is, I would not want to be the first guy to go out, because that post-game interview, you know, it's just going to be
awful. Well, if you shove all your money in the first hand, you could be the first guy going out.
You could be. So we'll see what happens. July 1st to the 3rd.
Yep.
The big one for one drop. But we'll definitely be keeping an eye on it.
If you're looking at my Twitter is @ChrisTessero at Twitter. if you have the $1 million and you want to back me to play, I already have 130. Well, I might have like $140 by now in money towards the $1 million tournament. So you wouldn't even have to put up the whole million, just like 999,000 and change. So just give me a holler on Twitter.
Still to come on The Poker Show, we'll be joined by Dennis Phillips and Phil Hellmuth. Stay tuned. This is The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers and earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package. Play for free at PartyPoker.net to see if you've got what it takes to get to Vegas. Qualify now at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Chris DeCero. I'm Rob Wong. And, of course, April 15th, very fresh in the minds still of poker players and poker fans, of course, as we are at the one-year anniversary of Black Friday. And joining us on the line now to chat about Black Friday and just everything else that's going on in the poker world, and especially in his world, is Dennis Phillips. Thanks for doing this, Dennis.
Oh, anytime, guys. I love coming on the show.
Well, listen, Dennis, it's been a strange year, and for a guy like yourself, it's probably been a strange year, more so than a lot of people in the poker world, because there's probably few people that are as an American in the poker industry as you are. You know, with your run and your final table, you became sort of an American folk hero in poker in a neat kind of way. And now, you know, the world has changed in American poker, and as the American folk hero, how's this affected you?
Oh, it's affected me a lot. It's affected on my sponsorship. It's affected on my play. It's affected a lot of friends of mine. There's so many things it's affected. I'm trying to look at this as the glass half full rather than half empty. Because if I start talking about the half empty part, I'll start ranting and raving on the air here. But the half full thing is, it has brought this to everybody's attention. It's brought it to the legislature's attention. I think a lot of more people now in the legislature realize how large of a scope this is, how many millions of people are actually were playing online, what kind of the lives that were affected by this, everything else, the need for regulation after all of the Full Tilt debacle. I mean, there's lots of things you can take for this that are kind of a call to arms to move forward. So, what's going to happen, we're not for sure. We're still hopeful that on a federal level, eventually something's going to happen. But I'm quite sure that on a state level, with Nevada leading the pack and New Jersey close behind, and then you've got California and Iowa and state after state after state that's talking about also doing something in this, that we're going to see movement on this sometime in the near future. And we're going to actually see regulated, secured online poker back in the U.S. in the near future.
Well, that's everybody's hope for sure. And in the meantime, everybody's got to keep on trying to grind it out and make a living. And it's been tough for some people. You know, again, you're in an interesting position because in 08, when you had your Cinderella run in the final table and played so well and opened up everybody's eyes, you happened to be in the spot where the guys that ended up finishing in front of you didn't have the same personality and charisma and likability that you had. And so it kind of, you know, I know you've heard this a million times over the last few years, but sort of made you the de facto world champion in a strange way, because you were the guy that everybody knew and talked about. And, you know, Eastgate and Demidov, not to knock them in any way, shape, or form, but they just didn't have the same charisma as you did. So you became this personality in poker, you know, cruising around and doing things, especially in the United States. And you must have had a lot more grassroots contact with people since Black Friday than most people would have. And what was the feedback that people gave you?
It started out just everybody's flabbergasted. You know, how could this happen? You know, they were totally shocked because it looked like we were moving forward towards some sort of a regulated, a secured environment, and then Black Friday happened. So many different people this affected. I don't think even now that people realize the scope of Black Friday, because it affected people in the media. It affected everything from photographers to vendors to dealers to a ton of different things here. When all of a sudden you have $150 million locked up on Full Tilt that nobody can get access to, a lot of the pros suddenly had to reevaluate what they were doing and where they were playing and what they were doing. All of a sudden there's no sponsorship for a lot of the pros. So, you know, they have to figure out what they're doing, and it affects tournaments. And the fingers that spread out from this thing were amazing. So a lot of bad things. I sat at a lot of tables when people were just really, really crying the blues on this thing. I'm still trying to look at the positive side of it. I'm still hoping that something will come out of this in the end that will be good for all poker players. But for the first few months after that, it was pretty dark. I'll have to say that.
Yeah,
and I have friends of mine that lost into six figures and still haven't got a dime of it back.
Yeah, it was angry wrong. For sure. There was a lot of anger there.
Oh my gosh!
Are you finding absolutely. Now that it's turned around a little bit that people are? You know, because of the possibility of legislation, and you're starting to hear these link-ups between, like, the big names like Party Poker and the casinos, and, you know, the possibilities of these connections and it coming around. Is there a more optimistic attitude now when you're talking to people?
There is. There's a very much of an optimistic attitude. In fact, I will be very surprised, and so most of the poker players that are in the know, if something doesn't happen, it happens fairly quickly. But, now, we don't know for sure. Obviously, whenever you're dealing with the legislature, anything can happen, and it is an election year, so who knows. But I'm very hopeful, and it's definitely much more optimistic at the table now and at the tilt than it was 6, 8, 9 months ago.
Poker player Dennis Phillips joining us here on The Poker Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Rob Wong, and Chris DeCero. Let's talk about some more positive things, Dennis, and let's talk about what you're doing right now. I mean, you're joining us currently at the airport, getting ready to do some travel. Of course, the World Series of Poker is coming up next month. I mean, how are you getting prepared?
Oh, I'm doing a lot of things. Right now I'm going back to St. Louis. I'm going to be playing the circuit event there for the next week. Then I go down to Oklahoma to play in Chad Brown's event. Chad's a very good friend of mine. He's got one going on at Durant down there at the Choctaw, and I'll be playing that one. Several other things coming up in the month of May. And then, obviously, for the month of June and the first half of July, we will be at the Rio. And I'm telling you, if you've never made it to the World Series of Poker, you have to check it out. It is flat out awesome. It is an experience you'll never forget.
There's no feeling like walking into the Amazon room or the pavilion and when all the tables are hopping and the action is full. There's nothing like it in the world.
It's unbelievable. All you hear is chips being shuffled and cards being dealt. And you look at table after table after table and say, I've seen him on TV. I know him. It's unbelievable. Everyone who's anybody is at the Rio and playing in those tournaments.
Now you mentioned Dennis that you travel around and you're obviously still playing circuit events and tournaments like we all do because that's your life as a poker player. But I wanted to ask you, you know, people don't realize this. If you've developed a name like you have for yourself, if you've got some charisma and some personality, there's a lot of subsidiary income that can be had in the world of poker, doing seminars, doing appearances, you know, showing up at properties to be who you are, to be Dennis Phillips. Have you noticed any change in that in the last year?
There has been a little of it, a little bit of a back down, a little bit of a hesitation from some people on some different things, but not a lot. What a lot of people don't realize is how ingrained poker is in the entire U.S. culture. The number one fundraiser for charities now in the U.S. is poker tournaments. I mean, more money is raised through poker tournaments than any other activities for charities. And I participate in a ton of them, so do almost all of the pros. I don't care whether it's an Antioch for Africa or Race for the Cure or you name it, there's probably a poker aspect of it somewhere in there. It's phenomenal that way.
And I can vouch for this with Dennis. I tell you this for sure. I've played in charity events with Dennis, and a lot of these pros, when they appear in charity events, they show up, they sit down, they are who they are, and they get up and leave. I've watched Dennis into his pocket, you know, pulling money out, buying rebuys, and doing things for the charities. You know, I'll give you that for sure, Dennis. You're a tremendous, tremendous advocate of all the charity stuff that you do.
But you're there for the charity. You're not there for yourself. You're there to promote it. And I think there's kind of an obligation, if you sit at that table, to encourage other people to also help that charity. I sat down at a table a couple of months back went with a couple of soldiers that were back on leave. And they were there, and this was for the DAV, and I knocked them out. So I brought him back in, and I knocked the guy out again. So I brought him back in. It got to be kind of funny and great, and the table loved it, and I loved it. I mean, what, that was such a win-win-win situation. He's having fun and enjoying it there. We're raising money for the charity. I just don't see any downside to it. It's awesome.
But there are, you know, there's a lot of guys, a lot of pros that do that because they're obligated to by their sponsors. They show up, and they can't wait to get out. So to sit down and take your time and be part of it is important.
I think so, too. I really do. And there's also a lot of pros that go around and do a tremendous amount of fundraising outside of what they're required to do. Somebody like an Andy Block who will play in a tournament in Texas, hop on a plane, fly to the East Coast, and play in another one just for charity and at his own expense. I mean, there's an awful lot of these guys that do that, and I don't think they get enough recognition. There's some pretty good guys in poker.
Dennis Phillips, poker player, joining us here on The Poker Show, Rob Wong and Chris DeSero. And you touched on a point there, Dennis, you know, that kind of leads into my next question. And I know Chris has talked about this, you know, I think it was in the first show that we did, but you mentioned the fact that poker is just so ingrained in the U.S. culture. I mean, it's called Texas, you know, No Limit Hold'em for a reason. Does that aspect, I mean, everybody knows somebody that plays poker, you know, people in the government play poker, professional athletes. I mean, does that, are you surprised at how slow the progression has been, you know, to get federal legislation and state legislation because, you know, everybody plays poker, everybody knows somebody that plays poker?
I absolutely am. I really thought by now this would all be taken care of. I mean, there are literally tens of millions of U.S. people that play poker, not only online, but they play it live, they play it recreational. It's huge. And I'm absolutely amazed that something hasn't been resolved by now. I'm amazed that there's still some stigma attached to poker, that people still have in the back of their mind this smoke-filled room with, you know, a guy in shades and a big cigar and Beatles standing behind him protecting his back. And it's so far-fetched. I sit down at a table right now, I may have a third-year resident at a hospital on my right and his grandmother at my left. I mean, it is everybody playing this thing, and it's so much fun, and it's so enjoyable, and it's just a huge way to, it's so ingrained in the U.S. That I don't think it'll ever disappear. It's here to stay, period, and the legislators need to realize that and need to just adjust their own thoughts.
I agree with you completely, Dennis, and the only thing that's happened that's been sort of a black mark in the last little while is Full Tilt stealing a whole pile of people's money.
Well,
but that's a whole different story. Listen, Dennis, we appreciate what you do, and if you're out there, for those that follow Rob and I on Twitter, at Chris DeSero, at WongSN590 on
Twitter. You got
Twitter.
It right, finally.
I got it right, finally. Follow Dennis. We'll throw Dennis's address up there as well on our Twitter accounts, at Dennis_Phillips on Twitter. The things that he does for charity and, you know, for his hometown and everything else are tremendous. He's a great guy. You're a great ambassador to the game, Dennis. And I'm looking forward to seeing this year down at the Rio.
Well, look me up. First drinks on me. How's that?
You got it, buddy.
All right, cool.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks for joining us.
All right, take care.
And there is Dennis Phillips, and we thank him for joining us. And Chris, obviously, he's fantastic. I mean, he sounds like such a nice guy.
So weird. You got this guy that he finished third in the main event of the World Series of Poker, but he was the American dream at the table. He was this truck driving guy from St. Louis, you know, who's just every man with his Cardinals hat. And the guys who finished ahead of him, Peter Eastgate and Demidov, were both great poker players, but they had no personality whatsoever. None. So Dennis Phillips, in his own way, became like the de facto world champion without ever having won the world championship. And he's made the most of it. And, you know, there's some people that don't like the way that he carries himself because he does that. But I think, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit. The guy does tons of charity work, has his own radio show, does a great job with that. And, you know, he's just made the most of his opportunity. And how can you blame someone for doing that?
And that's one of the best things about poker. I mean, you know, you have your cerebral, you know, quiet guys like a Phil Ivey, but then you have your big personalities, whether it's a Phil Locke or Daniel Negreanu, Phil Hellmuth. I mean, that's what I love about poker, the personalities, let alone, you know, the playing factor that how good these people are.
Yeah, and there's every type of person at the poker table, and that's one of the great things about it is if you're social at the poker table, and, you know, as poker players, especially if you play in big tournaments, you spend a lot of time with people that you don't know. So being social is a skill. And Dennis, he's a social guy, man, and he's fun to sit and play with. You know, he really is a good guy, and I don't begrudge him one bit of his success. And And he's, like I said, he's a folk hero. He's an American poker folk hero. He's sort of the moneymaker post-moneymaker.
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, definitely a fascinating guy, and hopefully we'll get him on the show again soon. We wish him all the best of luck coming up at the World Series of Poker. I mentioned Phil Hellmuth. He will join us next here on The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris Tessero. And, of course, we've been talking a lot about Black Friday, Chris, because, of course, it is the one-year anniversary. And joining us on the line to give his perspective 12 months later is the one and only Phil Hellmuth. Thanks for joining us again, Phil.
How's it going?
Going very well, thank you. And, I mean, you know, we've been talking about throughout the show, it's been a crazy 12 months. And, I mean, just your perspective on what has gone on over the past year with everything that has happened south of the border in the U.S.
Well, I mean, a personal thought first, of course, this is just me. You know, we had just finished a USO tour, the first poker player USO tour to Kuwait City and, you know, a bunch of other countries. And, you know, so we come back. And all of a sudden we come back to this. So that was a little, from a personal perspective, I'm like, come on, man. They're out there helping the soldiers and they're cutting off our legs here at home.
Well, it was a strange spot for you, Phil, because at the time you were the single most coveted free agent in poker because you had severed your ties with UB, and you were a free agent. And I know we've spoken about this before, that you were on the verge of signing a pretty damn big deal the week of Black Friday.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I would have certainly, you know, I was going to sign a deal where I was going to, you know, where it's going to be comfortable. And, you know, they were going to have a bunch of 100K buy-in events after that, 500K. I think they were even looking at a million-dollar buy-in, which, of course, UB's doing anyway this year. And so, I mean, if I would have had the results I had last year, you know, and we would have had those tournaments, maybe I would have won $7 or $8 million last year or something crazy. Yeah, I feel like I was in a weird spot and that, yes, I was a, you know, free agent. And, I mean, literally, we were a week, probably no more than a week away from signing a huge contract. So, you know... the kind of, you know, the kind of money that, you know, I could have basically retired on, had enough money. So, you know, that was close. And, but, you know, on the positive side for me, there's a couple of things. One, I was lucky that I wasn't associated with any sites that I had left months before this happened. So people didn't, you know, no one really came to me and said, where's my online money? Like happened to a lot of other pros. And so I think that was, you know, one of the silver linings. The silver lining is, I suppose, that, you know, it looks like online poker's going to come back to the U.S. probably, you know, we think now that it's going to pass at the beginning of 2013. The laws are going to pass. And so, you know, people like me will be in position to, you know, have their own sites at that point. Or, you know, we have a chance to take the time to look around and talk to a lot of different people that are interested in having sites. You know, we have a chance to talk to the VCs who would put up a lot of money for that stuff. We have a chance to put together some really good groups of people. So I guess that's one positive. I mean, certainly when the sites go legal, you're going to have, you know, at least three or four sites that are going to be worth a couple billion.
Well, that's an interesting point that you raise, because someone like yourself, I mean, you're in a really unusual spot. And as much as you maybe kind of got screwed a little bit because you were, you didn't get that deal done before Black Friday. You managed to come through that without being affiliated with any of the sites, you know, that essentially were shut down and locked down. So that puts you in a position where you could once again be free agent number one for all of these partnerships, these strategic partnerships that are now being formed in the United States. So my question to you is, what are people have to be talking to you? Like, what are people saying? Are they knocking on your door saying, look at Phil, this is what we're thinking and we want you coming forward with us?
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking to there's three or four different possibilities out there right now. And we're kind of waiting for, this is one of those decisions where if you choose to go, let's just say that, there's four letters out there, A, B, C, and D, and they're all going to be, online poker sites that are really going to ramp it up as soon as, poker's legal. And so if you're involved with one of those sites, is going to, probably be worth $10 billion. Will probably be a company that trades at $10 billion on the New York Stock Exchange, and it's possible that one of those four might not make it, or is only worth a couple hundred million. And so it's a big swing. If you're someone in my shoes, you have to choose the right partners, and the right combination of partners. And I think that I'm lucky. I live in Silicon Valley, and I have friends that, have made literally billions of dollars and hundreds of millions of dollars. And, it seems like I know a lot of the VCs, a lot of the biggest VCs on the planet. And so that helps because they're ready to put up $100 million, hopefully, if and when we need it, or $50 million, whatever it takes to launch. And then you have to look at, so I think it's a matter of trying to build the best possible team of poker players, of businessmen, of VCs, and I think that having a great CEO and having great marketing seemed to be a huge key to some of the most successful sites on the planet in 2011.
So would that be your choice? I mean, it sounds like it is moving forward that you would, instead of having someone come to you and say, for example, Party Poker or the Harrah's Group and Mitch Gerber come to you and say, Phil, we want you to represent us, that you would go to people in the business world and say, look, let's put together a group, let's be part of a group, and let's be in the money side of this instead of the employee side.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me to get involved with the site, it's a situation where if the site becomes worth billions, I really want to benefit and have it and make enough money where I never have to really think about money again. Or worry about, paying the bills or whatever. And so, it's kind of what you're hoping for. You have to be really smart. How many times can it so happens that me and maybe a couple of other guys are really in the garden spot as far as, our positions in the poker world. And so then, we don't know. Yeah, so whoever it is, it's someone are probably going to commit to for 5 or 10 years or something, at least 5 years. And so, choosing the right partners. And we've certainly looked at the possibility. We have some great software people up here too in Silicon Valley. And so I'm fortunately connected to, a lot of the bigwigs on all sides of this. And so, that still doesn't matter. I still think that, it gives us an advantage going out, but,
How close would you say this is to coming together, Phil?
Well, I think that there are two groups that I know that I've been talking to that were ready to go the minute that the law changed. And so, we were anticipating it was going to change in January, February, and I would have probably have ended up, signing with one of those two. And then I think that now that everything's changed, it gives a little more breathing time, gives a lot of people a chance to kind of go out and build their own thing in the meantime. And there may be a strategy where if you know or you feel strongly that online poker laws are going to change in February or, maybe right after the election, then, an argument could be made that you should launch early.
I don't know exactly what happened with Epic. I think that they, you know, looking at them now without knowing anything, and I don't want anybody to say I heard this or that because I didn't, just guessing, I thought their play, you know, may well have worked had online poker been changed. Like, you know, we thought there was a 70, 75% chance or 80% chance that it was going to get legalized in early 2012. Maybe they would have made it and made a lot of money. I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
So I mean, there might, there must be a way to kind of build something and be ready to go as soon as the laws change.
Phil Hellmuth, our guest here on the Poker Show on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. Let's talk about what you've been doing recently, Phil. I know you were over at the Irish Poker Open. I got to watch a little bit of that on the internet live feed. A 33rd place finish for you there. I know you were short stack early on, but you fought your way back. How was that experience over in Ireland there?
I couldn't help but feel as I left there, when I finished 33rd and they handed me a card saying you finished 33rd, I had a flashback to the 1988 main event. You know, my first main event.
Yeah.
Where I ran into this guy named Johnny Chan.
Heard of him, yeah.
You know, and we played a couple of really big pots, and I ended up finishing 33rd. So that was one of the flashbacks. Is, wow, I'm 70 in the main event a while back. You know, it was also great to have iSeries live, you know, and that's a very cool concept of having tournaments you can bet on outside of the U.S. live during the action. We had a great lineup for that with Mr. Kid Poker, Daniel Negreanu, and I. We had Devilfish in there.
Maria Ho.
Yaka, Maria Ho, yeah. And
great lineup. Definitely a great lineup.
Yeah, pretty, right.
So, Phil, now is the time of year when we come to the point where Phil Hellmuth, your focus has always been, as you've said to us many times before, for you it's all about the skins on the wall. And the World Series of Poker is not very far away. 6 weeks now, I think we are out from the start of it. What's your plan for this year? Because I know last year was an adjustment for you, I mean, financially and everything else. What's your plan for this year coming in?
Yeah, you know, I mean, right now I'm thinking of the, you know, I have one tournament on my mind more than any other at this point, and it's the $25,000 Buy-In World Poker Tour event. That's one that, you know, that, you know, do I want another bracelet or the World Poker Tour 25K more? It's really close. You know, winning like the NBC Heads Up Championship is very cool, you know. And, you know, do I want that more than a bracelet? I don't know. But do I want the 25K World Poker Tour Championship more than a bracelet? It's, you know, quite arguably the case, if I really sat down and thought about it. But the fact that I put it in the same kind of league as a bracelet, it's just something I've always wanted. And then, you know, in 2010, I made it down there, you know, and I regret folding ace-king before the flop winner is seven-handed. I just had the same thing happen to me a year and a half earlier when we were seven-handed, and Ivy had aces when I had ace-king. So I folded it to Eric Baldwin. I regretted that once I finished seventh. When I still had 1.8 million in chips, it was like, okay, I can. It's not a big deal. So, you know, we played a long, long time seven-handed, and, you know, unfortunately for me, I ended up finishing seventh and didn't make it the next day, and so, and, you know, when you look it up, I've made the final two tables in that event. I think I had two jacks against two aces. I was chip leader another year. I've probably been in the money four times in that event. I don't even know how many years we've had it. And so I know I finished 50th and like 16th and now a 7th. And I'm sure, you know, so that's one that get my eyes on. And basically I'm going to play, I'll probably start on day two, which is May 20th.
Well, I'm sure the people who run the World Poker Tour have done a great job. They've had a great resurgence. Would be happy to hear you say that Phil Hellmuth, as much as you value bracelets, values a WPT 25K championship almost equally as much. Listen, Phil, we take...
Not all. And by the way, not all WPTs, but the WPT 25K.
Yes.
That's a special event, man, the Tour Championship.
Absolutely it is. There's no doubt about it, and that is a big title and a very good one. So, listen, Phil, we appreciate you taking time on the anniversary of Not a Great Day, but as always with you, it looks like things are... are always moving in the right direction for Phil Hellmuth, and we look forward to a great World Series with you this year and some exciting news maybe about you moving forward in the poker business. So thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thanks, Phil.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Well, that's an interesting story, Phil, is in, you know, bad anniversary, Black Friday, but let's hope that a year from today we're talking about how the United States has opened up, that all the big companies are doing great things, and it's a completely different world out there.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like there maybe is some light at the end of the tunnel, finally, after all this mess. If you ever miss an episode of The Poker Show, you can check us out on sportsnet590.ca or grab us on iTunes. For Chris DeCero, I'm Rob Wong. This has been The Poker Show, brought to you by partypoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.